Welcome to Yogic Anatomy of the Mind. This workshop is designed to help us gain a strong foundation in understanding how yoga views the mind, and more importantly, why that is critical in our ability to grow on the path of yoga. We'll try to redefine our current notion of the mind and shift it more from a worldly practical sense to a deeper spiritual and yogically inspired awareness of the mind. And then we'll delve into the subtle anatomy of the mind, the various constituents of the mind that yoga understands, and how all of them tie together to empower our understanding of the world, our experience of the world, and ultimately how all of them contribute to our capacity to grow on the path of yoga. The mind is absolutely at the heart of yoga practice. And it's extraordinary to see the significance that the mind is given as you begin to study the source wisdom of yoga, in particular the Yoga Sutras of Patanjali. Here a very definitive statement is made that yoga means mastery of the mind, unfolding the mystery of the mind and understanding how the mind and its deepest powers enable us to not only be successful in the external world, but also to be successful in discovering our inner essence, unfolding an experience within. So this is really at the heart of why understanding the mind is so important as yogis. And we're really trying to understand the mind in a new way. We're trying to cultivate a new pair of eyes to see ourselves and to redefine how we understand the mind. For the most part, the mind, in a modern sense, in a scientific sense, is really seen in a functional capacity. In many ways, it's almost like it's another organ. It's another capacity that we have as this unique biological organism. And we're trained how to use that mind in a very external way. The mind really, yoga really sees the mind in a much different capacity, in a much broader sense. In many ways, when we use the word mind in yoga, it's more akin to the way that you might use the word soul in the Western world. Often when I hear the word mind, I think of more of a psychological interpretation, or you know, it's those subtle counterparts to our brain, to our neurology, to our physiology. But in yoga, we're talking about that, all of those things, and much more. And the much more is so much more that it's really too limiting to think of the mind just as that functional capacity, which is why I said that it might be even more appropriate to start redefining our use of the term mind in yoga closer along the lines of how we use the word soul to encompass the essence of our being, the power of whoever it is that we are at our core, which radiates out and makes everything else work. That's really how yoga sees the mind. In this regard, there are three really broad ways that yoga understands the mind that are really helpful in reframing how we see the mind. The first one is that yoga sees the mind as a living power. Another term for this in yoga, in tantra, is shakti. The mind is shakti, pure power. But the intriguing thing here is that this power is not inert. It's completely self-aware. It's the very essence of creative intelligence. So this living power that the mind embodies is a power which allows us to know ourselves and to know the world on every level. And one of the most clear ways that we understand the mind as a living power is prana. Prana is almost always referred to as prana shakti, the power of prana. And it's really the dimension of the mind which is this fundamental capacity for purposeful movement, to engage with the world, to engage with ourselves. That's the mind as a living power. The second way of looking at the mind is a field of energy or a space of consciousness. And this is a really intriguing one, because often we think that our mind is somewhere here in our head, or the mind is in a particular place. Yoga sees that the mind itself is a unique field of energy, a space, and that our body is superimposed in this space of consciousness, in this field of energy, not the other way around. The mind cannot be contained in the brain. Rather, the brain, the body, and so much more is contained in this unique energetic space that we're going to call the mind. When we work with practices like 61 points or other forms of a meditative relaxation where we travel through the space of our body and experience our awareness at various points that have a reference point of a particular place in our body, but are really a place in the subtle space of our awareness, they're actually locations in this energetic field of awareness that is our mind, in fact, and in which our body rests. That's the space that we travel through when we go through these systematic relaxation practices and when we work with certain meditative pranayamas or even forms of meditation where there's an awareness of a space within that we travel through and that we anchor our awareness to. All of that is an experience of the mind as an energetic field, as a space of consciousness. The third way that yoga sees the mind is as a gateway of consciousness. And this perhaps is the most critical understanding of the mind because it goes to the very heart of what yoga is trying to inspire us to awaken within ourselves, how we're trying to redefine our experience of the mind so that we can find the best in ourselves. The mind is a gateway, a lens for this infinitely vast and potent power of consciousness to focus itself. And it focuses itself largely outside, in the world. Our mind is that lens which allows us to see the world and to see it clearly, perfectly, richly. What yoga is inspiring us to do is understand how this works. How do we really see the world? And once we begin to understand that, once we begin to see how the mind focuses awareness, focuses consciousness outside of ourselves, we can use that same capacity to focus our awareness within. It's almost like reversing that lens and allowing it to direct consciousness within. That is at the heart of yoga and meditation. Such a simple yet profound idea that the mind is a gateway for consciousness and that we can direct that flow of consciousness inward. That's why the mind is at the very heart of yoga. And this process, seemingly so simple, to direct the flow of consciousness within, is extraordinarily nuanced. I won't say that it's hard, but I will say that we're very, very preconditioned for the mind to allow consciousness to flow outside. That's why it's difficult to retrain the mind to allow consciousness to flow within. But when we begin doing that, we discover a whole new world, an inner world. And this inner world is the playground of yoga. It's the place where we're trying to reach. We're trying to really understand ourselves in a new light. A new light, a light where we're not defined by the world outside of us, by all of our achievements and experiences outside, but rather a unique world, a rich world within ourselves, in our mind, where we can begin to blossom. And growth there is exponential. The opportunity for growth within is truly limitless. And that's why yoga places so much emphasis on understanding the mystery of the mind and transforming the mind into our greatest ally, our friend, so that we can find a meaningful way to experience our inner world and reside there comfortably and make that a reference point to see ourselves in the outside world. Allow our inner world to define how we experience ourselves outside. And one last comment here, that just as I said, that yoga sees that the body and all of our physical capacities really rest in the space of our mind. All of them are an extension of our mind. In a similar way, yoga sees that our external world, everything outside of us, all of our experiences of life, are really a reflection of our inner world. So whatever it takes to reach this inner world is what yoga prizes the most highly. It's what is the epicenter of life. All of our achievements in the external world are wonderful. They're meaningful when we want them to be meaningful. And we're only really able to do so when we have that connection inside. Meaning comes from within. And our mind is our vehicle to find our way inside and to experience whatever is within. That's why the mind is at the heart of yoga. So, we know that the mind is at the heart of yoga. The mind is a living power that's self-aware, the essence of our creative intelligence. The mind is a unique field of energy and a conduit of consciousness, a gateway to experience our inner world. That's the context of how yoga sees the mind. The word mind is limiting, so let's use a Sanskrit term to define this reality, everything which I just described. That mind is citta. Citta is this living reality that contains all of our physical awareness, contains our capacity to experience the world outside, and it contains our inner world. All of this is the mind of yoga, which is known as citta. One very important thing to keep in mind about citta is that we'll be studying various aspects of citta, of the mind, but they're not like organs. They're not distinct sections. Citta is a unique, indivisible, living reality. And all of the different capacities of the mind are integral to citta. It's no different than when we study the body. If the body is dead, it's a cadaver, we're able to dissect it and pinpoint different organs that perform unique functions. But all of them together, when they're alive, form the body. In a similar way, all of the mind is an integral reality. All of these different capacities work together. For the sake of study, we'll look at them individually, but they're completely commingled. The only distinction is that certain aspects of the mind are more external, the interface with the outside world. And certain aspects of the mind are much more internal, they're more subtle. They are more closely linked to our source, to that consciousness which is at the very heart of our being. That's the only distinction. None of the aspects of the mind are more important or less important because they all have to work together. We will place emphasis in yoga practice on engaging with or awakening certain unique capacities of the mind. But it doesn't mean that the rest of them are less important. For without them, our experience of the world and our experience of ourself wouldn't be the same. It wouldn't be as rich or real. So it's important to cultivate an attitude of respect towards citta, so that we don't feel that certain parts of the mind are lower, are inferior, and aren't in need of our love and attention and nourishment. All of the mind needs to be nourished together. We simply need to look for the right thing in the right place. And that's where a comprehensive understanding of the mind and where certain capacities reside and what we should expect from them is so important. So citta is the totality of the mind. And this totality of the mind really encompasses our full potential. The aspect of the mind that we're most familiar with is that portion of the mind which is engaged with the world. Yoga calls this the 10 senses. The first 5 senses we're very familiar with. Yoga calls them the cognitive senses, the senses of knowledge: seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and hearing. These 5 capacities of the mind allow us to perceive the world outside of us. And that's the primary way that these senses of cognition are engaged. They define how we experience the world. And amazingly, that experience of the world is an extremely powerful way that we define ourselves. We never really think about how we see, smell, taste, touch, and hear ourselves. But it's almost like whatever we understand ourselves to be is reflected in the world. And that reflection returns to us in an experience of seeing, smelling, tasting, touching, and hearing. So these 5 senses of knowledge are extremely rich in their capacity to create experience. They define how we understand the world. and yet there's more. But for now, and in large part, these five senses are the only way that we can understand the world and ourselves, which is why they're the right place to begin. It's literally how we define reality. This is real. And if we can't see, smell, taste, touch, or hear it, it's not real. As we've already begun walking on the path of yoga, it's quite possible, quite likely, that we've already begun to stretch our understanding. And we're beginning to feel that there might be something more to reality than what we can see, smell, taste, touch, and hear. That's the gateway to looking at deeper capacities of perception. But before we go there, I said that there are 10 senses, the five cognitive senses, which we just defined. So what are these other five senses? Yoga calls them the five senses of action, five active senses. And they're defined in a really intriguing way, so we'll go through them in a little bit more detail. These five active senses are the sense of speech, physical manipulation, movement or locomotion, procreation, and elimination. So at first glance, it's a little hard to understand how are these senses. I thought a sense was supposed to help me perceive the world. What yoga is trying to help us understand here is that perception is not a one-directional channel. Intrinsically, perception is about our relationship with the world. It's a bidirectional relationship. The five cognitive senses are clearly about information flowing in. When that information flows in terms of how we see, smell, taste, touch, and hear, we're spontaneously motivated to respond, to react, to digest that experience and then express it, to share it. That is intrinsic to our mind's unique capacity to perceive. The only way that we're able to express ourselves in this unique vessel that we call the human mind and human body is in these five ways of speech, physical manipulation through our hands, largely, movement, which is largely defined by the movement of our feet, procreation, and elimination. These are five ways that we engage with the world, five ways that we leave our mark on the world, five ways that we express whatever is within. And that expression is largely in response to what we perceive. Speech, manipulation, and movement are a little bit easier for us to understand because they're what we do. It's how we engage with the world. And it's amazing when you think about it, these three ways of action, speech, manipulation, and movement, probably constitutes the overwhelming majority of what we do in our waking state. That's something worth reflecting on in and of itself, that anything we can do to enhance the capacity of these senses will enrich probably 90% of our day. The other two, procreation and elimination, are a little bit more unusual. But when we look at them, they are a direct extension of how we will leave an impact on the world. Our progeny, or anything where we see ourselves passed on, is one of the most profound ways of making a long-term impact on the world. And elimination is what I said is the fifth active sense. There might be a little bit of a broader way to frame that. I often like to call this fifth active sense consumption, because elimination is only the end result of a much broader process that we could really call consumption. Whatever we take in, we have to digest, assimilate, so that we can enjoy it, so we can nourish ourselves, so we can sustain ourselves. But there's always a byproduct of that process of consumption. That's elimination. When we consume mindfully, we are able to eliminate mindfully, and that elimination itself becomes a way that we can positively impact the world. When our consumption is not mindful, our elimination is not mindful, meaning we create waste in a way which is not sustainable, which is not healthy for us or for the world. So this is another way of looking at this fifth active sense, that just like we engage with the world in a very direct way through speech, movement, and manipulation, we have to think about how we pass ourselves on, procreation, and we have to think about how we consume so that we can survive, but do so in a way which is mindful and sustainable so that our elimination is also sustainable and reflects our inner desire. So these five active senses are how we leave our mark on the world, how we engage with the world. And together, these 10 senses, five active senses and the five cognitive senses, are the totality of what of our mind's capacity to experience the world and engage with the world. The intriguing thing is that these senses are an integral part of the mind. It's very important to see a distinction between the sense and the sense organ. Our five cognitive senses are the best way to really look at this. Often, we think of our sense of sight, for instance, as our eyes, not realizing that our eyes and optic nerves are a sense organ. When we begin to look a bit deeper behind that sense organ, we realize that the sense organ itself is only an extension of a part of our brain that houses that unique cognitive capacity that we call sight. What yoga is talking about in terms of the cognitive senses is one step more subtle than that. It's not the part of our brain which enables the experience of sight. It's a subtle capacity of the mind which allows that part of the brain to create this capacity of sight. So part of what yoga is inspiring us to do is to cultivate a more and more subtle awareness of ourself. And working with the senses is a really important way of doing that. That we need to redefine our relationship with our senses so that they become more subtle. And when they become more subtle, we're able to unlock a greater power of our senses. Our sense of sight is far more than what our eyeball can contain. It's far more than what the part of our brain can contain. It's a unique capacity of the mind, which we call sight. The same is true with smelling, tasting, touching, and hearing. All of them have a respective sense organ and a respective part of our brain that empowers those organs to really sense, to feel. But the true power of the sense is a power of the mind. And when that power is allowed to blossom, our brain and our sense organs have exponentially more power to perceive and more power to engage with the world. That's really where we're going with the study of the senses in the context of citta, the mind. So these 10 senses are powers of perception and powers of engagement with the world, the cognitive senses and the active senses, respectively. All 10 senses are actually an extension of a capacity of the mind known as manas, which is often called the 11th sense or the master sense. Another way of defining manas is our everyday mind, our conscious mind. That aspect of our mind, which is an organizing principle, which allows all of these senses to bring information to a focal point and for all that information to be coherently organized. Otherwise, all that information would just be a huge jumble. So of course, in large part, this is what our brain does. Our brain is the seat of the manas. And let's be a little bit more precise. Perhaps the cortical brain, the conscious brain, the brain which is directly engaged with our experience of ourself and in the world in an everyday way, in terms of our senses. And we'll talk a little bit more because it's not a direct one-to-one correlation between the conscious mind and the manas, or between the cortical brain and the manas, but that's a great starting point. Our brain integrates all of these streams of raw information that our nervous system brings from our sense organs and integrates them. In a similar way, the manas integrates all of the streams of perception that flow in through the five cognitive senses and that are engaging with the world through our five active senses and brings them to a point of focus. It makes them coherent. That manas, though, is much more than an organizing principle, much more than a traffic cop. I call the manas the master sense. Really what this is telling us is that all 10 senses derive their power from the manas. They're an extension of the manas. The manas holds the capacity to directly sense. To make that more specific, more tangible, more concrete, the senses further elaborate on that sense, that master sense, and they express that master sense in these 10 unique ways, which we call the 10 senses. It's really something extraordinary to reflect on. You know, in the Western world, we talk about this this euphemism, the sixth sense. Here I'm calling it the 11th, because in the yogic scheme, there are 11 senses. But the idea is one and the same, that the mind has a capacity to directly sense something. And that's beyond what our normal, everyday senses can do. There is a part of our mind that we can awaken by becoming consciously aware of the manas, which will allow us to sense the world directly. And that often takes the form of allowing these 10 senses to grow a little bit more vibrant, for them, for their experience to grow a little bit more rich. An expression of the master sense isn't always a quantum leap where it's a extrasensory perception. Our ability to perceive the world in a way that's more rich, more beautiful, more meaningful, more in focus, is an expression of the manas. And that capacity can either flow through the senses, or it can be something where it's directly engaging with the world. And that's where, when you look at even the physical depiction of this yogic anatomy of the mind, sometimes we like to draw the manas like a lens. It's our mind's eye to the world. It's how we see the world. When we're able to awaken a deeper potential of the manas, the world comes into view more clearly. It's like making sure that our mind's eye can see 20/20. The good thing is, we don't need to get a pair of glasses to do that. The practice of yoga allows us to retrain the senses and the manas, all 11 senses, so that they can see the world clearly. That is at the heart of so many yoga practices, to transform our relationship to our senses, to energize them, nourish them, and bring them into focus. The 10 senses and the manas are really the way that the citta engages with the world, and it's our gateway to begin seeing within. So the manas is a master sense, and I called it our everyday mind. It's directly linked to our senses and the conscious part of the brain. But it certainly doesn't imply that the manas is ordinary. I wouldn't call it the ordinary mind. Because the manas is that unique link between our external world and our inner world. One of the things that we begin experiencing as we walk on the path of yoga and meditation is that we begin to feel that our mind is something more than we previously understood or experienced. We begin to feel that the mind truly is a living power, and it begins by awakening the capacity of manas. One of the first things that we begin to feel is that my mind has its own identity. My mind is a discrete reality within. It's much more than a byproduct of my biochemistry and my neurology. It's much more than an accidental expression of all that electricity of the brain. My mind is alive. My mind is aware. How does this awareness come into being? How is my mind empowered to be more than an extension of my brain? But rather, how is it that my mind itself holds my brain, my nervous system, and my body in place? What is that deeper potential of my mind? And this is where yoga really shines. It helps us shed light on this deeper dimension of the mind. All the aspects of the mind that we explore from here are subtle. Some of them might have some correlation to a particular part of our brain, particularly the deeper parts of our brain, our unconscious and our limbic system, those parts of our brain which are our primordial brain that go beyond our everyday conscious mind. But at this juncture, we start to really move away from a direct one-to-one correlation of these aspects of citta with the brain and go to a more subtle dimension. And this is what I meant by citta being a unique living reality, a living power, a space of consciousness. all of these dimensions of the mind are within the space of consciousness. And they're as real as any other part of our mind which is directly correlated to our brain or the outside world, once we can begin to feel them, once we begin to cultivate a personal relationship with them. They're always there, but we never knew that they were there. And more importantly, we don't really know how they work. And that's why a systematic exploration of how yoga has understood the mind is so important. This yogic anatomy of the mind is not something which was created. It's a digested expression of what yogis of the past have consistently experienced. That's how this yogic anatomy of the mind came into play. It is a blueprint for how yogis have seen themselves through the path of yoga. And it's how we can see ourselves as we keep growing on this path of yoga. Manas is the master sense. What allows this master sense to engage with the world in an objective way? What creates this experience of an individual awareness of a unique experience of ourself in the world? That comes from a unique capacity of citta known as ahamkara, also sometimes referred to as asmita. This is the capacity of the mind for self-awareness. It's the capacity of the mind to identify each object of experience as ours. That's usually why ahamkara is translated as ego. And sometimes, unfortunately, we think that ego is all bad and that this part of the mind needs to be subdued, conquered, even eliminated. And yoga definitely is not saying that. We need to understand what our ego is all about and ultimately where the ego drives its power, which we'll get to in a little bit. But more importantly, how the ego shapes and sculpts our experience of ourself and of the world. When we engage with the world through the manas and the senses, and we experience, every single object of experience is immediately labeled in a specific way. Let's, for the sake of simplicity, good or bad, pleasant or unpleasant. And in any of those dualities, one very specific thing happens. This experience is mine. It's mine. And perhaps only mine. Or almost completely mine and only a little bit someone else's. This tremendous power of identification to say that this is mine comes from ahamkara. Now, it's not all bad. And quite opposite to that, there's a very important power of ahamkara, of ego, which allows the mind to function. Ahamkara allows us to have an objective experience of the world. It allows us to draw a little circle around ourselves, to create a unique bubble of awareness and say that this bubble of awareness is mine. It creates a field of experience. Without ahamkara, this entire vast universe would be a completely undifferentiated, homogeneous pool of potential. But we want to experience ourselves in a very specific way. Fulfillment is all about understanding who we are in a concrete, tangible manner. That's what ahamkara lets us do. It lets us experience the world in these small slices. And we put all of it together. And that is what turns into our experience of ourselves and our experience of the world. So ahamkara, or asmita, is that unique power of the mind for self-identity, to create a unique identity for ourselves. And look at the relationship between ahamkara and the senses. How do we create this identity? We create this identity by weaving together a rich tapestry of awareness through all of these streams of perception through the senses. Every time our senses engage with the world, engage with our relationship with the world, which is really engaging with ourselves, ultimately, each of those streams of perception are woven together by ahamkara to create an extraordinarily rich tapestry of life, an identity. That's the identity that ahamkara holds in place and creates a unique space for it to be real. That's the power of ego. That's the power of self-identity. Yoga spends a lot of time exploring this dimension as we work with the deeper parts of the mind. Because the question here is, are we truly fulfilled today, or is there more? In large part, that question, that burning desire to be completely fulfilled, is what propels our journey, what propels our life. And for many of us, that desire is what motivated us to walk on the path of yoga in the first place. I wish to be more. I wish to unfold my full human potential. I wish to experience life in a new way that's more rich and more real. A lot of that has to do with how we transform our relationship to our ahamkara, to our identity. We need to see how we can retrain our mind and senses so that they engage with the world in a more meaningful way, with more clarity, with greater purpose. A lot of that has to do with transforming our ego, reflecting on how much of our sensory engagement is habitual, unconscious, driven by our pre-existing habit patterns. Yoga calls these pre-existing habits samskaras, subtle impressions in the mind. Every time we engage with the world, these streams of perception come within, and our ahamkara claims them as their own. Each of these experiences is like a seed. It's a subtle impression in the mind, known as a samskara. The ahamkara creates these samskaras, and the citta stores them. That's why the next major way of understanding citta is this infinitely vast storehouse of memories, storehouse of samskaras, subtle impressions in the mind. All of the subtle impressions which our ahamkara defines as its own, all of the experiences which are brought to us from the senses and digested by the ahamkara, are stored in our mind. Now, is there a particular part of the mind that's dedicated to storing these samskaras? No. The citta, this living reality, the totality of the mind, stores them. They pervade the totality of our citta. For the sake of study, we say that there's a storehouse of memory in the mind. And sometimes certain schools of yoga actually call that function of the mind the storehouse of samskaras, the repository of our memories, our unconscious mind. They also call that citta. But in our study, we're going to refer to citta as the totality of the mind, and that this storehouse of the mind is integral to the citta's capacity. The reason why we often refer to this as unconscious, as the unconscious mind, is that it's so vast. I use the word infinitely vast, and yoga doesn't shy away from making bold statements like that. Anything of the material world is finite, but the subtle world has the potential to reach to infinity. There is no limit to our citta's capacity to contain our experiences, to contain all of our samskaras. And that can be a little bit frightening, because what it means is that these samskaras are infinitely vast. All of these different seeds of our awareness, all of our identities are infinitely vast. If part of the path of yoga is to work with these identities and transform them so that we can let go of our limiting identities and embrace our empowering ones, it might seem like there's a lot of work to do. What we really need to see is that the building blocks of our potential, the building blocks of who we wish to be, are infinitely rich. It's not that there's an infinitely large pile of identity that we need to work with, but we have everything that we need. So this is not something to be afraid of, that our unconscious mind is infinitely vast. It inspires us that if we dive deep enough, we can find exactly that samskara that we need to reweave who we are and to transform ourselves into being that expression of ourself which embodies our highest good. Ahamkara creates our samskaras, and our citta contains all of them in this reservoir of memories, habit patterns, personalities. In large part, We are whatever our ahamkara, our identity, tells us we are. And that identity is in relation to all of these samskaras. So the question is that the extent of the mind, or is there something more? And ultimately, what breeds life into all these samskaras, into all these subtle impressions of the mind, all these identities? Do we create our own identity, or is there a deeper power which allows all of these identities to remain alive? Is our manas that power which empowers our senses, or is there something deeper which shines through our manas and illuminates our senses and illuminates the world? Yoga very definitively says that there is something more. And that something more, that finest aspect of the mind, which breathes life into the totality of the citta and all of the different aspects of citta which we've already explored, is known as buddhi. Buddhi is that capacity for pure perception. It's our faculty of discernment, intuitive discernment, inner discernment. It's not the part of our mind which thinks, but it's the part of our mind which knows. It's the part of our mind which is the true decision maker, which is able to see through this infinitely vast field of impressions in the mind, our samskaras, which are conditionings, which almost make it feel like we're running on autopilot, acting in response to how we've already experienced ourselves to be. Buddhi is that capacity that allows us to transform ourselves, to see ourselves in a new light, and undo whatever conditioning might be there by virtue of the influence of our ego and our samskaras, our habits. It's like our inner conscience. It's that spark of consciousness which radiates its power from our very core and brings everything else to life. That's why buddhi is seen as the power of consciousness. The unique thing to reflect on here is that it's a spark of that power of consciousness which is directly connected to a much, much deeper pool of consciousness. Buddhi is our personal capacity for pure perception. And this capacity of pure perception is our power. What yoga tries to help us do is first to reach that place, to experience the transformational potential of buddhi, to experience something which we can genuinely call an expression of intuitive wisdom. Intuitive wisdom is the hallmark of buddhi. An experience of buddhi is that flash of intuition where we know, not because we intellectually understand it, not because we perceived it in the outside world, but because the voice of our conscience has spoken from within. It's an inner awareness. That experience of buddhi is what yoga is helping us to try to find. And what yoga says, just as a footnote to begin, so we don't get overwhelmed, is that that capacity of buddhi is actually a capacity that comes from an even deeper source, pure consciousness. But we don't have to worry about how that works to begin. We simply need to discover how we can awaken our experience of buddhi. One of the things that we often say is that we're trying to awaken buddhi. But that almost is that's a contradiction in and of itself. Buddhi is that part of our mind which is ever awake. We don't need to wake it up. We simply need to become aware of it. We need to make sure that the veil which our ego puts between us and our buddhi is thinned and thinned and thinned and eventually removed, so that we can be fully aware of that which is always present. Our buddhi is ever awake. Our buddhi is present in every aspect of our life, and it pervades every aspect of the citta, this unified field of awareness that we call the mind. Buddhi is always there, but we've forgotten that it's there because our ahamkara, our ego, claims to be the force of our mind, the power of our mind. Our ahamkara tells us that we are the source of our own power, And it's an amazing thing that how is it possible that our ahamkara is so strong that we've forgotten our deeper source of power, that we've created a world in our own image. And the irony here is that it's the power of the buddhi which is transferred to the ahamkara, which gives the ahamkara so much power, which allows our ego to create this world, which is so real to us, a world of all of our personal memories, personal identities, habits, where we sometimes think that that's the extent of whatever our reality is. And we forget that we create reality in the light of buddhi. And when we allow that light of buddhi to shine through, our world can be as rich, as big, as subtle, as potent as we wish it to be. That's what yoga is helping us to do. Yoga is not about trying to leave the world, but rather to be here fully. And the only way to do that is to awaken our awareness of buddhi. All of the practices of yoga at the end of the day are really about that. We're trying to find a way in and a way to meaningfully engage with buddhi. Because often our engagement with buddhi when we work with yoga philosophy and wisdom is intellectual. And it's very important to begin from there, to have this framework, this yogic understanding of citta, how do all these different pieces work together. But we need to find an experiential way to make this real. Once we've understood that the light of buddhi shines through all aspects of our citta, it is what empowers our identity and gives our ego, our ahamkara, its strength. The light of our buddhi is what shines through our manas. Manas is like a lens which allows this light of consciousness that flows through the buddhi to illuminate the totality of our world through the senses. We need to find a way to experience that. That's where the path of yoga inspires us and leads us. Exploring the subtle anatomy of the mind, the yogic anatomy of the mind, is a lifelong journey. And it's really important to integrate both study and practice together as we work with this exploration of a yogic anatomy of the mind. The goal here is to understand who we are at a deeper level and find that entry point to experience an inner reality. That's what citta is all about, our inner reality. And experience how our citta, how our mind, allows us to have a rich experience of the world outside of ourself. How our mind is a gateway to experience fulfillment in every way that we can imagine, and allow that experience of fulfillment to eventually blossom into a genuine and lasting experience of freedom. The question is, how do we get there? We have to systematically understand and experience each layer of the mind, one by one. And that's where the path of yoga, Raja Yoga, the eight limbs of yoga, is so powerful, that we have a systematic blueprint to explore this inner world. And keep in mind that when I use the word inner world, it really encompasses our body, breath, and senses. Even those aspects that we currently think are engaged with the external world, from the perspective of the citta, are within the mind. All of the body, all of the senses, is within the mind. This was a very famous quote by Swami Rama, the founder of the Himalayan Institute, that all of the body is in the mind, but not all of the mind is in the body. If we're looking to experience our inner world, we need to find an entry point, and we need to ask for the right thing from the right place. And that's exactly how the path of yoga is designed. When trying to explore this yogic anatomy of the mind, we begin by working with our body and our breath. These are our entry points to find a gateway to really meaningfully engage with the mind, with citta, which itself is an amazing statement, which wouldn't have made sense until we hear this equally provocative statement that all of the body is in the mind. The body is an extension of the mind. We can use the body as a gateway, as an entry point to find our way in. That's exactly how asana is designed. We work with asana to cultivate a more conscious awareness of being in our body. What does it genuinely feel like to be in this body? So much of the time, we're in autopilot mode. We're not even aware of how we use our body and what it feels like. Yoga asana is so powerful because it reminds us in a very concrete way of what it feels like to be in our body. And it reminds us how we can use our body to cultivate a very rich experience of ourself. And it really is a simple formula. Conscious movement and breath awareness together awaken a much deeper potential for feeling. Conscious movement plus breath awareness. These two components really are at the heart of almost every style or tradition of yoga, asana. And all of us have experienced them in different ways. But when we begin to move consciously and breathe, we feel a unique awareness within our body, our physiology. When we begin to ask ourselves, is that just my body or is it something more? That inspires us to look for subtlety. And that's where pranayama comes in, the next limb. We begin to see how working with the breath, both in a more vigorous, energizing pranayama or in a more subtle meditative pranayama, awaken different experiences of the energetic dimension of our breath, which is known as prana. This pranic awareness is amazing because it is partially in context to our body, to our physical experience, and it's partially something more. It's more subtle. It feels a bit more rich. It feels a bit more real. And the touch points, the reference points of that feeling of reality are not just my physical body, it's something more. That's exactly why it's said that pranic awareness is that gateway to begin going inward. It's our unique capacity to begin becoming aware of awareness itself. One of the questions about working with the mind is, how can I be aware of the same thing which creates awareness itself? Isn't that an oxymoron? The mind is the tool for perception. So how do I perceive it? It's a very valid question. And yoga defines this, or yoga answers this in a very definitive way. That begin with that which is real to you right now, which is your body and your awareness of your body. And begin unlocking a potential which resides in the body, but is much, much more than your body, which allows you to feel. And that's your pranic awareness. The pranic awareness is that aspect of the mind which allows us to feel. It's pure feeling. And once we can begin to get a taste of this through asana and pranayama, we can catch that thread which allows us to go inward. We begin to feel the mind in motion. And not because we're thinking, but because we feel a flow of awareness. The mind is always moving. We need to find a way to flow along with it peacefully and to allow that peaceful flow of awareness to go within rather than to flow out into the world. Asana and pranayama awaken this potential for pranic awareness, which, very simply put, is a peaceful inward flow of awareness. We begin to feel the mind engaged in this peaceful flow of awareness, aware of the space that the mind occupies. And we begin to direct that flow of awareness to a focal point within. That's where the path of meditation intersects with the path of yoga. That we can begin to feel our mind when we direct this, the mind to flow inward peacefully. And that's really where we begin to experience the distinction between senses and the manas, which are engaged in the external world, which are that part of the mind which we work with in asana and pranayama, with the deeper dimensions of the mind. Prana is the link between our external world and our inner world. And we begin awakening that in some of the more subtle dimensions of asana and pranayama. We hone that through meditation. And through the path of meditation, we begin to feel ahamkara. We begin to have the capacity to experience what it means for our mind, for our chitta, to be the storehouse of all of our memories, all of our samskaras. Because we're not thinking about them, but we're being aware of the space that holds all of those impressions. If we needed to experience every single memory, every single habit pattern, or every single samskara, subtle impression of the mind, one by one, it would literally be like counting to infinity, which we're never going to be able to do. What the path of yoga and meditation is helping us to do is to feel citta. I said that citta is a living space. It's not something where you can dissect the manas from the ahamkara, from the aspect of the mind, which is the storehouse of memories. It's an indivisible living reality. Most of the time, we're only aware of that part of citta, which is externally oriented, senses, and some part of our manas. Through the path of meditation, we begin to feel the totality of the mind. And we feel that that reality, which was once defined only by our senses, is just the tip of the iceberg. We begin to feel something real inside. That's what pranic awareness gives us. That's what a systematic experience of meditation gives us. We begin to feel the totality of our mind. And how do we do that? Simply by being aware of the space of consciousness and having a focal point of awareness that allows our mind to flow inward. That inwardly flowing mind begins to introduce us to that part of our mind, which is ahamkara, our ego, without us thinking about it or worrying about it, but simply feeling which part of myself defines my identity. And am I more than that? So the path of meditation is the epitome of an experiential path. We have to feel this awareness again and again. And each time, we reveal new layers of our being. Our awareness of ahamkara, our ego, grows a little bit more subtle and refined. We're able to delve deeper into our samskaras, not because we're reliving them, but because we see that the scope of our mind, the space of our mind, is bigger and bigger, more and more rich than we imagined it to be. It's not imagination, it's pure feeling. And ultimately, what we're doing with all of the practices of yoga, but certainly meditation, is to simply bask in the light of buddhi. We're trying to quiet the mind so that our craving for sensory perception and the habit that we've cultivated of being engaged in the world is quieted down. We invite the mind to say that let's withdraw the senses so that they can rest and be fully nourished. Normally, we only do that when we sleep. Through yoga, pranayama, relaxation, and meditation, we consciously engage the senses. First, we engage them in a very defined way as we work with asana and movement and stillness. As we move into relaxation and meditation, we ask all of these 10 senses to withdraw and become quiescent. And really return the power of the senses back to the manas, back to where they came from in the first place. And then ask the manas to allow that power of perception to flow within and experience where is this power coming from in the first place. And it's amazing because we don't have to think about where it comes from. We simply need to be present to it. We need to be present to this ever-flowing stream of awareness that we call consciousness. That's what meditation is all about. Simply being present to that dimension of ourself, which yoga calls the buddhi, which is pure discernment, pure feeling. And it takes practice. And it takes practice because we're not used to it. We're very accustomed to having our mind be engaged with the world. Over time, our senses can be trained to become quiescent and to relinquish their power back to the manas. The manas can be trained to remember that the ahamkara is that which tells it that you must think of yourself this way and seek this kind of experience of the world. We remind ourselves that when we invite our ego to soften and we ask ourselves what empowers the ego in the first place, what empowers the manas, this pure, the manas capacity to perceive, what empowers that in the first place, we become aware of the buddhi, that which is already there. It's an experience of our pure consciousness. It may seem like a big leap, but yoga tells us that we can do it because that is the very essence of our self-nature. Our buddhi is at our very core. And the nature of buddhi is to be a self-revealing power of consciousness, to guide us towards an experience of complete fulfillment. And that fulfillment naturally unfolds into freedom. Every expression of our buddhi, as it flows through our ahamkara, all of our samskaras, our manas, and the 10 senses, is an expression of that power of fulfillment that's flowing from our buddhi. And when we begin to engage with the world in this way, everything takes on a new light. Everything is a little bit more meaningful. And we're able to see a link all the way back to our buddhi. And through continual practice, through the path of yoga, we can gain access to our buddhi whenever we need it. Or more simply put, we're constantly aware that it's there. And when it's time to go within and to be fully bathed by that deepest nourishment of consciousness, we're able to let the world be whatever it is. We're able to let all of our identities rest wherever they are and simply enjoy that space within. This is the path of yoga, and this is why a yogic anatomy of the mind is so powerful. We systematically understand ourselves layer by layer, and we see how this wisdom can empower our practice, and see how our practice really flows from this, that practice isn't random. Practice is very purposeful. And when we know what the roadmap looks like, when we know where we want to reach and how we can reach there, we have much more confidence in our ability to reach there. That's why a systematic exploration of yogic anatomy of the mind is so powerful, and why it should inspire us to practice. I hope you keep practicing and enjoy what this wisdom can bring you. Thank you.